Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 Central on CBS.
The following is a sponsored program on WBT.
Investment advice provided on the following program is on an individual basis. Listeners should not consider today's discussion as a recommendation for any investment and should carefully evaluate before investing. This is your Real Estate Today on News Talk 1110 WBT.
Hello and welcome to the show, Your Real Estate Today. We're glad you're with us. We are pre-recording this Saturday, unfortunately. So I'm sorry we're not live to take your calls, but boy, do we have a lot to talk about. I'm Paul Jamison, the host of the show, Your Real Estate Today, with the Jamison family of companies, Jamison Realty, Jamison Property Investments, Jamison Property Management, here with my good friend Sandy Dickinson with Summit Funding. Hey, Sandy.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you back. Thanks for sitting in the studio with me today. So I hope it's a beautiful Saturday. That's the expectation. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about myths primarily today.
I like myths.
Yeah. We're going to debunk some myths. We're going to share some information. We've got a lot of those to talk about. But always, you know, I'd like to start out the show with some very interesting data points, some data facts and things. There was an article in the Mecklenburg Times this week that talked about listing your home on Wednesday makes it sell for more money.
Who would have thought?
On average, $2,023 more.
Huh.
On Wednesday. On Thursday, it sells faster if you list it on Thursday.
This makes no sense to me, but I like it.
So, I think it also said the worst day to list your home. What do you think?
I would think Sunday.
That is exactly right. Sunday. She didn't even read the article.
No,
she
I didn't.
K-N-E-W. She just canoe. Pretty smart. All right. So there's a little fun facts there. Also, I'm always fascinated by upgrades and their likelihood to bring more money.
Everybody wants to know that.
You know, people talk about it on an ongoing basis. What the value of upgrades is. So we've got an interesting comparison. We have upgrades in an entry-level home versus upgrades in a top-tier home. So that would be, top-tier would be non-entry-level.
Correct.
Let's call that top-tier home over $300,000.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Sure.
Okay. So entry-level, although $300,000 is getting to be about entry-level right
true.
Now.
It's true.
But entry-level homes, 40% preferred the entry-level homes that had solar panels versus the top-tier home, only 13%.
I think. Well, young people like solar panels.
They do.
They like conservation.
That's it. And, you know, if it's one of those neighborhoods that they're driving a Subaru and wearing Birkenstocks, they really like them.
And I hear they're coming way down in price.
Yes, they are. They are. All right. Something else was fun. The farm sink. You know, the headline read, you get 30% more money for your house if you get a farm sink. I don't think that's really what they meant.
I'm going to get two.
In the headline, I think we're going to go with my interpretation, which is the farmhouse sink in the entry level is preferred by 26% versus only 16% in the upper level. I actually like the farmhouse sink.
They're very functional.
You can wash your dog in it.
Yeah, super functional.
It's pretty good.
Big pan. Yeah.
You know, and you know, and your grandkids.
Right.
You know,
that's what I would say.
Go out to the pool, get some ducks, and put them in there. All right. Pergola. 25% on the entry level.
I don't really like them.
Yeah. Well,
they don't. I mean, what's
for,
the function?
For us older folks, it's only 4% on the top tier homes.
Yeah, I could see that.
I like the covered better.
Me too.
You know?
Yeah.
And mud rooms, again, 24% on the entry level, more than likely because they have kids, equals mud.
Mm-hmm.
And 13% on the top tier homes.
Mm-hmm.
Heated radiant floors was about neck and neck, 23 on the entry level, 25 on the top tier.
I would think everybody likes those.
Yeah. Here's an interesting one. Exposed brick, Sandy.
Exposed 23%
brick. On the entry level, 5% on the top tier. I think they're still into the shiplap phase.
Maybe so. I like brick.
Yeah, I do
too. I like stone, too.
Hardwood floors, 22% entry level, 2% top tier.
Hey, they get all scratched up.
That's right. Especially if you have a dog with nails.
Yep. And high heels.
Okay, here was the one that I laughed at the most. Jacuzzi tub. 21% of the entry-level homes prefer the jacuzzi tub, whereas 2% of the top tier prefer the jacuzzi tub. Truth. Everyone lives and loves the fantasy of the jacuzzi tub. Oh, we shall do that, eat strawberries and sip champagne. I had a jacuzzi tub in the last house we were in for 19 years. I went in that thing maybe twice in 19 years because of muscle ache. You know,
I think I would use it.
There's a real estate term. If you look it up, it's called a tubber. Somebody that enjoys a tub over a shower. That's a real term we use. So if your buyer is a tubber, then we look for making sure that there's either a tub in the stop laughing, TJ. That there's a tub in the master. Okay.
If I had time, I'd be a tubber.
I think you guys get it. Are you a tubber?
I would if I, yeah, sometimes, only when I have time, but I rarely have time, but I do.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, tubber time is rare for you. You're always on the phone. Okay, I guess you could take your phone in the tub, but anyway. Okay, picket fence, 21% of the time, and on the top tier, zero.
Yeah, who wants to paint that?
Butcher block, 20% on the entry level and 6% on the top tier.
That's some real stuff. I believe almost all that.
Okay, wainscoting and exposed beams were also a big hit in the entry level. You know, the exposed beam things, we were talking about that before we started the show, you know. That used to be the thing.
I think we're over it because we already had it.
Yeah. I think there's exposed beams, but I think they paint them now. So they're there, but they're not in the raw form.
They paint them the same color as the ceiling?
You know, probably there's some designer rule that you have to paint it an accent color of some sort to match the carpet. I have no idea. I never profess to be a designer. But anyway, so there you go. That's fun. Okay, so I want to remind you again. About 2 weeks ago, I did the statistics of our market. I don't know if you were with me or not, Sandy. You might have been.
Might have been.
And one of the things I want to emphasize again is days on market. Days on market is truly gone down about 11% year-to-date this year over year-to-date last year. So it went from 53 to 47 days. But what I really look at is our month's supply of inventory. And what that means is if they quit building houses today, how long before we'd run out of houses to sell? Or if new houses didn't go on the market, basically. Last year at this time, there were 2.9 months of inventory. There are now 2.2 months in inventory. So in 2.2 months, we'd be sold out.
Scramble.
Yeah. But what I also found interesting was the stats around the number of apartments.
Oh, I'd like to hear that.
In 2018 to 2019, there are over 12,000 apartments projected to come online.
Here?
Here. There are 9,000 that came online in 2016 to 2017, of about 10,000 and some 2017 to 2018.
And we're not
over
saturated,
12,000.
Right?
Huh?
We're not saturated yet.
Well, I know, and they said that the vacancy rate has remained under 400.
Wow.
Through those years. That's pretty significant for the amount of
seems like they're all high dollar, too.
They are. They're uptown. But I think we're going to see, as people want to move out of downtown, I think we're going to see some more vacancy in the uptown apartment world. I think people want a house, and I think they're seeing that although it's nice, I think they're going to – everybody seems to want a house. So we'll see how that evolves. I'm optimistic that they're going to move out everywhere.
Everywhere. Me too.
Okay. So Sandy and I are here. We're going to talk more about the myths of real estate investing and the myths of mortgage lending. So you're going to want to stick around for that. There's a lot of good information here. We've got a lot of great things to share. So you're tuning into the show, Your Real Estate Today. We're not live, but we're pre-recorded from WBT Studios. So stay with us. We'll be right back on News 1110, 99.3 W. Welcome back to Show Your Real Estate Today. Hey, it's Paul Jamison with the Jamison Family of Companies, your host for the show today, and with Sandy Dickinson, partner with Jamison in the funding area with Summit Funding. Hey, Sandy, here we go.
Okay.
We're going to talk about, as we promised at the break, and unfortunately we're pre-recording. Sorry we can't take your calls today. Some myths. Let's start with you about some lending myths, Sandy. Some mortgage myths.
Okay.
We're going to start with, I'll throw the very first one out that I hear all the time.
Okay.
All right. A pre-qualification and a pre-approval are exactly the same thing.
False. That's false.
Okay. No. Why?
Well, a pre-qualification to me is a cursory check based on a conversation that says, hey, based on what you told me, it looks like your loan meets the parameters and it would work. A pre-approval would be when I take an actual application over the phone or in person and I collect the documents and I run the loan through an automated underwriting portal and I get an approval. That's pretty safe. That's good stuff.
So you've gotten documents.
I've gotten documents. I've verified what they told me over the phone or in person. So I feel much better about it, especially for a self-employed borrower, because sometimes they think they make their gross revenue when we think they make their net adjusted gross revenue.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because we've talked about this many, many times on the show for self-employed like me and many, many others. The object's to pay the least amount of taxes you can, right?
Right.
You know? But when you're being evaluated for a mortgage, certainly there are add-backs that you can see, expenses that are non-recurring or...
A couple things,
You know, other things that you can add back, but it does make it a little more challenging.
Absolutely. It's sort of a catch-22, but so you have to have net income to qualify for a loan.
Yeah. So you have to actually make money.
And not spend it all through the business.
Yeah. Or right. Expense it all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. So let's just jump into the second one because it fits as well. So let's say we get that pre-approval letter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that guarantee that you will get the loan?
No.
Oh, well, wait a minute. You got all my stuff.
Okay, so the components of a loan are cash, credit, income, and property. So we wouldn't have the property aspect on a pre-approval, and we still have to have the underwriter validate things. And throughout the process, sometimes people do things that that can change an approval.
Like, what do you mean?
Like, they might go buy a car, or they haven't told me about a house they own, or they're late on a mortgage payment or a rent payment. That's the worst. And their credit score drops. So you've got to walk on eggshells the whole time you're in the mortgage process. Otherwise, you're gonna get frustrated and possibly jeopardize the loan.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Sandy, because we've both been doing it a long time. Many, many years ago, I had a client who more than qualified for a purchase. And not only was he purchasing a rental home from me, he was purchasing a mountain home for his family.
Mm-hmm.
And he, again, more than qualified. But his wife... wanted and was excited about the mountain home, so she went out on the American Express card and purchased the furniture for the mountain home to the tune of $10,000 to $15,000. And although financially it didn't change his ratios, it changed the way that the underwriter evaluated the package. So when they pulled his credit the day of or day before closing, boom, now there's a $15,000 charge on his American Express card. Guess what happened to that closing?
I would think it was pushed back.
It was.
Because you have to validate the debt through an actual supplement and the payment, rerun it through the underwriter's guidelines in the portal. And anyway, it is a process. And surprisingly, we can't just, underwriters can't just stop everything and work on that one loan.
Why?
I know. Because they have a ton of loans that are in front of it. And it wouldn't be fair to the other people who got their stuff in on time. And underwriters are pretty hardcore. Very hardcore.
Okay. Well, you know, it delayed the loan a week.
Wow. Yeah. You never know.
Because not only did he have to pay off the American Express, then he had to get a statement showing.
And then a credit supplement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woo! Not a happy camper. So now, as a matter of course, that only happened to me one time. So now, as a matter of course, I drill into my buyers. Do not buy anything.
I do that, too. I had one girl, didn't know, I guess. She took her money that she had saved up for her closing and went into the house she was buying and decorated it. And then we did a verification of her assets right before closing, and she just broke down crying. She didn't know. She said she didn't know. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So she ran and got a gift, and we closed her. But it was a lot of drama.
Oh my goodness, yes. All right, so here's some myths now on my side from real estate investing. I'm going to start out with the one that I might stand on the table. So if you visualize that, a guy in a suit and a tie standing on the table, screaming, throwing his arms around, that might be me. All right. Sandy's going to hold me down, she says. Okay. Real estate investing is not like on TV. That is the number one myth. If you are, like me, a watcher of TV flipping, real estate investing, love it or list it, you know, whatever show is yours of favor, in Atlanta, Charlotte, Vegas, whatever you want it to name. It's not like it is on TV. You know why? Because they do things that sometimes just aren't reality. You know, I was watching an episode of Love It or List It the other day, and I was watching, and they put forth their laundry list of all these different things they wanted to do to this house, and then they had a budget of like $15,000. And I'm going, the appliances alone going in that house are probably 10. So they're going to update the bathroom, redo the kitchen, extend the laundry room, you know, put on a new deck, do all this kind of stuff for $15,000.
Wow.
Who are you kidding? The budgets that they have are ridiculously, crazily low. And, you know, the work is very, very extensive, and it's not like it is on TV.
It's probably, you know, not an upgrade if you buy it at Habitat.
What's that?
If you buy your appliances at Habitat, it's probably not an upgrade.
No, it's probably not. But although Habitat has taken a lot of really nice stainless appliances in, I've seen brand new stuff come into Habitat where somebody gets a, you know, brand new Gen Air and stuff, and they want to replace it with something fancy schmance. You can get some good stuff there.
Well, I'm going shopping.
But, you know, I do tend to agree with you. But it isn't like it is on TV. It's just not. Investing in real estate certainly has some of the similar aspects and things that you can come across and do or deal with. But don't plan your budget based on what you see on TV. That's just not true. All right. Next. In real estate investing, if you buy a rental home, you're also not going to spend your whole life fixing the toilet. A lot of people feel like when they buy an investment property, all they're going to do is go unstop toilets and put in new
If there was one thing I really would want to know is how to do that, how to replace the insides of a toilet.
I can show you, but that's another show.
Okay.
Okay. Meaning that your whole life won't be involved with maintenance. Or it could be if you decide to do it yourself. But that's what a property management company is for, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to invest and you want to be active and involved, that's a choice. But also, there are other ways. So we're going to keep talking about more of these myths. Sandy Dickinson, Summit Funding, and I'm Paul Jamison with the Jamison Family of Companies, host of the show Your Real Estate Today. We're glad you're listening. Stay with us. We've got so much more on News 1110 99.3. Welcome back. You're turned in. You're tuned in to the show, Your Real Estate Today. Thank you so much for listening to us. And if you turned in, you'd hit a fence. So let's just stick with the tuned in at this point. I'm Paul Jamison, your host. Happy to be with you today. Sorry for the pre-recording, but it just happens sometimes. Here with Sandy Dickinson with Summit Funding. All right, Sandy. Let's continue to focus on more of these mortgage myths. One of the ones that really stood out to me was, you know, is there anything that I can do to make my loan more desirable to a lender, especially if I've had credit issues in the past?
Yes. The one thing that really makes a difference to me is saving your documentation. If you've had a hardship, we're going to want proof that you had a hardship. So medical bills or your bankruptcy papers or your foreclosure substitute trustee deed. If we can write the story and we can prove to the underwriter that this was a one-time something that happened that is not an issue now and is no chance of or little chance of happening again, that makes a difference. I mean, it won't erase the actual time frames that the actual programs have. However, if we make a case, then we have a much better chance if your credit score hasn't recovered or you haven't saved enough money. I mean, it will make a difference.
So if you've had a hardship in the past, that's not going to be the sole determining factor as to whether or not you can get a loan.
Correct. But we have to prove that the time frames match up, the late payments match up with the whatever happened, it should be a catastrophic issue. I mean, if you're just overextended. I'll tell you one thing, divorce is not really a good reason to be late on loans. I know people hurt each other when they're in divorce, but you're hurting yourself too. So if you can take care of each other until you get through that, it's better for both people because then they can move on and purchase a house. Because really, you're obligated on the loans regardless of your relationship.
And regardless of your divorce agreement.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Right. You know, it's interesting, too, Sandy, that same subject also applies to rentals and investment property. One of the things we see a lot is we see folks from several years ago that have had to do short sales or have had a hardship related to a job, loss of job or other kinds
illness,
of things.
Yeah.
But then I can look at a track record and say, you know what, this person has pulled themselves up by their bootstrap for the last 2 years, 3 years. They have paid everything on time. They've got good references. They've been at the same job, you know. And the people that actually make an effort, it makes a difference.
It does. Reestablish your credit. If you had a hard time, then don't not use credit. Use it sparingly, but pay it on time and keep the balances low.
Yeah, and I really like that even the mortgage industry understands that, you know, everybody has a hiccup every now and then, and it's life, and should not keep you from the dream of what you want to do.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're here to
help.
All
right, so 20% down. So is that always the requirement for getting a loan?
No. I do still get that question. We have loans at 100%, 3% down, 5% down. investment even at 15% down.
Oh, really? For 30 years?
For 30 years, yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, so there you go. There's another myth just busted right there, because I thought most of them were 25%.
Well, you're going to get a better rate and no mortgage insurance with 20 to 25% down.
Yeah, because mortgage insurance can mess your returns up a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, investors should probably plan to put some money in, put some skin in the game, because that's basically the name of the game for investors.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and it's all about that return on cash and all the different numbers and the blah, blah, blah. That's a subject for another day. Perfect credit. Is that a guarantee you're going to get a loan?
No, it's not, because lately we've had a lot of issues with job stability. So we want to see that you have a job and that you've been in the job. I even had a guy that had $4 million in the bank, and he couldn't get a loan from a regular, and he had perfect credit. He couldn't get a loan from a regular lender because he was taking draws from his brokerage account every month. He could take plenty to qualify, but lenders consider that asset depletion, and they won't count it as income, and so he didn't qualify. So I had to take him through a portfolio lender that was more common sense. It was the craziest thing. He had 800 scores. He had $4 million in the bank. He couldn't get a loan.
Wow. Well, you know, even there have been times in the rental market where we have not approved someone with a 800-plus credit score.
Hmm.
Because when you look at the report, right?
Right.
And you look at the income, car loans, other debt, credit cards, and you added it all up, you realized that that person was standing on the edge of disaster.
Right.
And that one hiccup, even though their credit score looked good, their ratios after they paid the debts that they just had accumulated. We had one guy that had five cars. He had Porsches and BMWs and a Mercedes. And then, you know, he had a couple of Japanese cars. And you added up the loan payments or lease payments on top of the credit card debts, which were maxed out, he'd been keeping up. But
we
did not rent
last?
To him because we knew that one hiccup, guess who's not going to get paid?
That's right. It's the biggest payment,
be
typically.
The landlord. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we talked about credit, and let's go back to income. Is income... Income, then, is what determines how much you can borrow, right? How much you make?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. It does determine how much you can qualify for. However, once again, it's a whole review of cash, credit, income, and property. So if you have great income, great credit, and you're trying to buy a geodesic home, you can't get a loan. Or a single wide on a lake is tough. I mean, you'd have to go to some special portfolio financing. So property's a factor. Credit still is a factor, even if your income's good. A lot of people don't think that. I have great income, but they haven't been motivated to make payments. We put a lot of emphasis on motivation to make payments. So,
Motivation to make payments, huh? There's got to be an acronym we're going to have to come up with. Motivation to make payments. How about you get to stay? Mm-hmm. Okay. We can make a song. Country song. There's a country song there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Get on it?
Yeah.
All right, TJ. Get us a country song for next time. Is it always best to get a 30-year mortgage, Sandy?
No, I don't think so. I think if you're going to be... If you tend to relocate a lot, I think the intermediate arms are terrific.
What do you mean? What is an intermediate arm?
That would be a 5, 7, 10-year arm,
okay,
where the payment is fixed for that many years, and then it becomes a 1-year adjustable. People have been afraid of arms since the downturn, but in the right instance, I'm a fan of those. Also, 15-year fixed is great, or 10-year if your ultimate goal is to pay off your mortgage. The payments don't double, and you pay it off much quicker, and you pay a lot less interest.
Yeah. You know, I would say, though, and I don't know how you feel about this, especially when it comes to investment property.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend to folks to go ahead and get the 30-year loan, And in case there are some unforeseen expenses
or
that come into the equation,
right?
You're locked into a 15 or a 30 instead of a 15.
Right.
And if you want to make additional payments, self-amortize. Make an additional one or two or three payments a year, or pay a little bit more towards principal each month. But then you control when that happens.
Right. And something a lot of people don't realize is if you put a significant amount down, if you get a bonus or win a scratch off or or get, you know, sell something and you have an extra $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, if you put it down on your loan, you can request for them to re-amortize your loan and drop your payment.
Ooh,
so
I like that.
A lot of people don't know that, but it's usually a small fee, maybe $300. But most lenders are willing to do that.
Does it reset the interest to start at the beginning again, where they take more interest?
And it'll amortize the remaining number of years you have on the loan.
Okay, so you don't lose
the
remaining
you
have. Well, that's good. All right. Well, we've got lots more to talk about. This is the show about myths in real estate today. The show, Your Real Estate Today, Paul Jamison, Sandy Dickinson. We're here in the WBT studio, so hang tight. The show, Your Real Estate Today, here on News 1110, 99.3 WBT. The show, Your Real Estate Today. Welcome. I was going to say, TJ,
there's
you
that started, country
you
song.
Wrote that song really fast about, you know, that was really good. Well, that's just a tease for TJ's new hit. So anyway. That's the mortgage amortization blues. I like it. All right. I'm here with Sandy Dickinson. If you're just tuning in, this is Paul Jamison, your host. Sandy's with Summit Funding. I own the Jamison family of companies. And we're here talking about real estate. Anything having to do with it, about your home. We're working on conquering some myths today about mortgage lending and about property investment. So if that interests you, hang with us. We'd love to share whatever information we can with you. And again, we're pre-recorded today, so just hang tight and we'll unload some information that hopefully will be helpful for you. Here's some more myths about real estate investing. First of all, that it's quick and easy. Now, I remember sitting in my living room watching one of the three channels that we had on our television. I'm aging myself right now. And there was a guy came on named Carlton Sheets. Carlton Sheets had a system for buying rental real estate property. Well, they set the hook on me and pulled hard. And I made the three easy payments of $39.99, or maybe it was four easy payments of $39.99. And a series of things began to show up to help me become a real estate investor. I read the whole thing. And I went down and tried some of the things that were in there. And
did they work?
I didn't have much success. I couldn't find anybody willing to loan me the money to buy their property. So I found another way called the Paul Jamison way. Okay. So it is not quick and easy, but... slow and steady wins the race. And in this business, you know, Sandy, you talked about it earlier. I think that in order to be successful in this business, you have to have skin in the game and you have to be able to put a significant amount down enough where you're comfortable to manage some of the hiccups that may come along the way with this business. One of the comments that I made earlier, probably skipping ahead a little bit, is houses need maintenance. Just like people, the older you get, the more maintenance you need.
It's true.
Right? Unless you're like some of my investors that purchase new houses, and those houses don't need any maintenance for the first 5 years or so. But still, occasionally you have vacancies and other things that play into the formula. So just... be ready. Have a plan.
And I think I would recommend owning a house before owning a primary residence before you invest in other properties.
I think it makes and it gives you an appreciation of what it costs to to manage a house. So just curiously, we're going to move on to the next one. It says you need a lot of money to get started. It does take some, though, is my comment. You know, it doesn't take $500,000 in cash to start investing. You know, I typically look for people to be able to put the 20% down, but also if the house were to be empty for a month or two, that it's not going to affect their daily lives.
Right,
okay?
Right.
So what types of loans are there for investment, Sandy?
Basically the same as for primary. We have your 30-year fixed, 15-year. We have the intermediate ARMs. You just have to invest a little bit more than a primary. And you do have to have some money left over after closing so that we know if there is a hiccup that you can handle the a month or two, like you said.
Right. Now, can somebody use their home equity line to purchase piece
property? They can, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Any secured against, used to be any asset, car, whatever. Now it has to be some real estate.
Right. I'm not a CPA. Please consult your CPA for more information, but I did have a good night's sleep last night. The tax law basically does allow you to purchase rental property, the way I understand it, with your home equity line and have it deductible. All right. So if they make their primary residence a rental, can they get a refi on it?
Yes, but it'll be a rental refi, so your rate will be higher than your typical primary residence. So we have some people that are that try to refi their current property and then go buy a rental, then go buy a new primary. We have secret reports that we look at for that. And if you're buying more than one primary residence in a year, they're going to probably catch you doing that. So if you try to, if your intent is not to live in the property and you refinance it as a primary and pull cash out, they consider that mortgage fraud. So you'll have to refi it as an investment, and then you can buy the one primary afterwards.
Got it. Got it. All right. What does a cash-out refi look like?
That looks like 75% loan-to-value on an investment property, meaning that you can't pull out more than 75% of its value. The rate is a little higher because it's riskier for the lenders, not for you necessarily. But but other than that, it's basically the same process.
Is it really? Okay. Mm-hmm. So if somebody wants to pull out, the less they pull out of the cash, is it the lower the rate?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. I think once you get below 60%, it's a little bit better.
Right. And a lot of people want to finance property in an LLC or a trust.
LLC would have to be either a portfolio loan or a commercial loan. But trust, we can finance properties in. They need to be revocable.
Revocable, all right, versus irrevocable. That makes sense. So one of the things in an article I read this morning was that, and I kind of look back, you know, it's kind of one of those things, it's always easier to look in the rearview mirror about the mistakes you've made and go, gosh, I wish I would have done
right.
that. One of the things I wish I would have done was purchase rental property earlier in my life. I had some great opportunities down in Pawleys Island that I wish I should have, woulda, coulda, shoulda, didn't. But if you're a millennial or someone out there, you know, think about purchasing a rental property. One thing I see a lot of people do is they'll buy a small starter home. Like I'm working with a young man right now who's going to buy a small ranch home, a 3-1 or a 3-2. And then he has plans to live in that home for a period of time, even bring on some roommates. But eventually, as he moves on, to make it a rental house.
Yeah, I see a lot of people doing that. And it's a good way. It's tough to save money now. I mean, you should have diversification when you save. And part of that is real estate.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. Cash flow, cash flow. All right. Here's another one that if you raise the rents, it'll force the tenants out. You know, one of the things that I tell people is, let's say your rent's $1,000 a month, and you come to the tenant and you go, well, you've been paying $1,000 a month, but market rent is $1,300, so I'm going to raise your rent to $1,300. Well, more than likely they're going to lose that tenant. But if every year, as a part of your system, you put in small incremental increases, it becomes, I mean, apartments do it.
Right.
It becomes a part of what they expect. I mean, there's always a rational argument, at least for the owner. Taxes go up, insurance goes up, cost of that house goes up
right.
every year that goes by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $25, $50, $75, $100 a year is a reasonable amount of money based on what the market trends are.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think about that versus having to move out and go vacant. You just shot yourself in the foot. So you have to be careful.
Yeah, it took me a while to figure out that I should be raising rents every year or two.
It doesn't matter if they're great tenants. I mean, make them smaller and make them every year. And I think it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time, but I want to make sure, Sandy, if people want to talk to you about a mortgage loan, how do they get you?
Just call me at 704-577-0144.
And we talked a lot about investment property today, but if you're interested in buying and selling for a primary home or investing in real estate, we would love to talk to you, as well as management. If you have a house that's sitting there and you're not sure what to do with it, or you're interested in moving on but keeping your primary as a rental home, we would love to talk to you as well. You can reach us at 704-846-DUNN. That's 704-846-3663, or on the web at myjamesonhomes.com. Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you.
And we thank you, and enjoy your Saturday, and God bless.
Opportunity is knocking. We're Jameson Realty.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.